Football Weekly Extra.
Football Weekly Extra, podcasting's A-team reunited for one last job. There's B.A. Barricus.
Quit your jibber-jabber.
There's Face Hannibal and Howling Mad Murdoch, but we can't remember any of their catchphrases.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Thanks, Sean. All together in today's season-ending pod that's as packed as the cardboard boxes at my desk at Setanta headquarters. There's breaking news. Ronaldo to Real. Call him Perez Hilton as Real's new president puts together another outrageous outfit. There's the latest on the road to the World Cup. There's the skinny on Dr. Sid's stag do. There's your post. And there's more highlights than Shawnee's hairdo as we bring you our end of season awards. All that in today's Football Weekly Extra. Oh dear. Hello, pod listeners. Off we go then with the aforementioned Football Weekly Extra. Today, as you've gathered, Barry joins us. Hi, Barry.
Hello.
Hi. And Sean Ingle.
Hi, James. Although no highlights. It's lemon juice, apparently.
What do you mean, apparently?
I don't have highlights.
All right. What do you mean, the lemon juice? What's that
about? Jason Donovan used to claim in the 1980s that he didn't have highlights, he just had lemon juice. So it was meant to be a riff on
Jason
that.
Donovan used to claim a lot of things.
And that chuckle belongs to Jonathan Wilson.
Hello.
Brain in a jar? How are you doing?
Gloop, gloop, gloop.
Oh, dear. Best not make him angry because, yeah. Breaking news. Hey, breaking news. Plenty to talk about today, but let's start with the breaking news. It happened just this morning. Ronaldo, £80 million. Cristiano Ronaldo going to Real Madrid. Or, I should say, the £80 million has allowed Manchester United to give him permission to talk to Real Madrid, and he has to now agree his personal terms. Barry, your hand is in the air.
Well, you say it happened just this morning, but there seems to be a lot of... the prevalent opinion seems to be that it happened a year ago, last summer.
Right.
And that Alex Ferguson, everyone agreed not to talk about it, like Fight Club. If Ronaldo agreed to stay for another season at United, he was given permission to go this summer. So I think everyone knew about the deal except possibly Sir Alex Ferguson.
But really?
It seems to have been in place since last summer.
Which would be why he said that he would
not sell them a virus.
Exactly.
Which is exactly what he's done.
No idea.
Well, I think it's still up in the air whether Ferguson knew or didn't know. I think he probably did know. In this whole discussion, I think it's worth separating Ronaldo, the player, who scored 91 goals in three seasons, and Ronaldo, the man, who was obviously a preening, egotistical guy that's absolutely loved himself and probably does help wreck dressing rooms with his attitude. But personally, I think it's a great shame that he's left England because he's provided lots of great copy. But I'm glad he's done it now rather than drag it out till August while we'd have to write stories on it every single day of
day of the week. Need that room for talking about Setanta's demise four times daily on the blog, don't you?
I haven't been.
All right. Anyway, bitter? That was a bit of a... Yeah. Anyway, whether he knew about it or not... do you think it's good business in any way? Could it be good business?
I think it could be good business for both teams in the way you've got someone like Ronaldo who has been a problem in the United's dressing room and it makes a statement of intent for Real Madrid. What I think is interesting for United is now that if Fergie doesn't get to Carlos Tevez, which is what people are saying, it means he's probably now going to have to build another fourth great United side. I mean, Giggs is basically gone. Scholes is basically gone.
And Giggs just won the PFA Player of the Year.
Oh, come on.
It?
Yeah, that was a... sympathy vote.
Just mention it.
Ferguson is going to have to build a fourth great team after the 94 team, after the 99 team, after sort of 2006-08 team. And is he old enough? Has he got the motivation to do it?
I think it's interesting for Ronaldo as well to see how he does away from United. I think the way that Rooney and Tevez, two seasons ago, and I guess Tevez less so this season, the way that they've played for Ronaldo, I wonder if you'll find such selfless players elsewhere.
That's a very interesting point. And the fact that Rooney has, to a large extent, been sacrificed this season, and we saw again against Andorra just what he's capable of when he is allowed to play in a more central role, points to the fact that could be the silver lining for United, the fact that they are now able to make Rooney their central figure. But are they going to spend the money? What's the expectation, do you think, Sean?
Well, there's lots of talk about Frank Ribery, which has been swirling around.
Rafael Honigstein, of course.
Honigstein, exactly.
Story early,
from the Deutsche Zeitung.
Well, Rafa was widely ridiculed when he broke that story, so it'll be interesting to see if it turns out to be true. Also, when I think it was Danny Taylor broke the story about the deal being put in place for Ronaldo last summer, he was widely ridiculed on our blogs, and those who were widely ridiculing him are noticeably quiet so far this morning.
I think Luis Antonio Valencia is the obvious one that United have been linked with for a while, and you'd imagine United would go for him as well.
Well, Rob was wondering if perhaps one of Real Madrid's wingers might be making his, their way to Old Trafford as part of this deal. But we shall see. We should actually dial Sid Lowe up, assuming we can get a word in edgeways amongst his many other media contacts, to hear his take on all of this and all the other many transfer stories involving Spanish clubs.
Hello.
Hey! Hola, hola, Dr. Sid.
This has been absolutely ludicrous this morning.
I bet it has. How many people have you spoken? How many broadcasters have you spoken to already, Sid?
I've been the worst of hauls this morning.
Right, we've got your sloppy, not seconds, but probably fifths or something.
That's not a nice image, is it?
Yes. Are you raw? Are you sore? Can you still service us?
Oh, people are seeing another side of you, James Richardson. They thought you were the nice man, but no.
Hey, Sid, how are you feeling out there, friend? I noticed that the deal which you told us about way ahead of any other so-called pundit has come to fruition. Cristiano Ronaldo is, assuming he can agree terms, on his way to Real.
Yeah, I think him agreeing terms is not going to be a problem, isn't it? I love the notion of the statement on the Manchester United website this morning. It said, Manchester United have agreed a fee with Real Madrid and given them permission to talk to Cristiano Ronaldo. It's now up to Ronaldo to agree something with Real Madrid. Do you not think Cristiano's been talking to Real Madrid for the last year and a half?
Yeah.
So I think it's all done. Very interesting, actually. We could almost turn this on its head, couldn't we? The Manchester United statement says, we have agreed an £80 million fee with Real Madrid. Now, what this suggests is that deal that we've been talking about for ages that was in place for Cristiano Ronaldo to go to Real Madrid, which we weren't sure if it involved Manchester United or only Cristiano Ronaldo and Real Madrid, clearly did involve Manchester United. Clearly Manchester United had agreed £80 million as part of that deal. So in a way, that statement on their website today shouldn't say Manchester United have agreed the £80 million deal with Real Madrid. It should say Real Madrid have agreed to carry on with that deal.
Right, because the story being that the deal was in place from the old presidency and there was a substantial get-out clause, which may have been the reason that Perez decided to go through with it at the end of the day.
Yeah, because what Perez was trying to do, of course, was bring that figure down. Now, I have to say, in the interest of honesty, and I doubted that Man United would really have signed that deal. I completely believed and had been told that the deal had been signed between Cristiano's agent Jorge Mendes and Real Madrid. But I have to say, I have my doubts that Manchester United have signed it, despite the fact that sources in Madrid were saying to me, yes, Manchester United have signed it. I just can't see it. But this clearly suggests that, yes, indeed, they did. And that when Ferguson started ranting about Franco's team and I wouldn't sell that mob of virus and all the rest of it, well, hang on a minute, the deal was done at that stage, or it certainly looks that way now. Now, of course, until such a time as someone clarifies this absolutely from the Manchester United end, we can't be 100% sure, but it certainly looks like it now. And as you say, what Florentino Perez has been trying to do over the last few days is say to Man United, look, that was my predecessor, that figure's too high, I'll buy him, I'll come and get him, but let me have him for cheaper. And Man United, of course, have said no, stuck to their guns, and they've got £80 million for him.
And, of course, with Ronaldo going to Franco's team, that's the second great victory for fascism in the UK in the space of a couple of days.
It doesn't end here, does it? He's already spent, close to £140 million in a week. And there's more on the way, is that right?
Well, there is more on the way. Now, I think that what may happen now is that things will calm down in so much as... Now, the footballing side of things is one thing, but politically, Florentino Perez has got the two deals he wanted to do now. He's got Cristiano Ronaldo and he's got Kaká. Those are the two that he really wanted. Now, what that means, of course, is that he now goes to Bayern Munich, as he has done, and says for Ribery, as he did last night, I'll offer you £50 million for Ribery, and Bayern Munich say no, he's worth £100 million or you can get lost. Well, maybe Florentino would have felt pressure to trot the bid. Now he can just say, actually, yeah, all right, I'll leave it then. Don't worry, I've got the two players I want. Now, obviously, what that means is in August, when those clubs who deep down want to sell, even though they talk about not wanting to sell, those prices will start coming down, and then Florentino has a stronger hand with other players, which is why I think that the next set of deals may take a little longer, with the exception of David Villa, which I think there's a good chance of that happening really rather soon.
All right. Sid, last time this was all billed as the Galacticos, I'm sure the Spanish press have come up with a similar but more extravagant epithet this time around. What is it?
No, they haven't. They're just going back to Galacticos, aren't they? And the other day, brilliant. So much fun. The front cover of Marca the other day said the Florin team, as in Florentino's team, which I thought was a pathetically weak attempt. But it had a picture of what their team list is going to be this year. And this is obviously if they buy all their players, and they're assuming that they will. Real Madrid's team this year will be, I think it was Marcelo at left back and Pepe and a centre back. I can't remember who the centre back was, to be perfectly honest. Sergio Ramos, Casillas, midfield of Xavi Alonso on one side, Ribery on the other. Cristiano Ronaldo and one other midfielder, which is this bizarre two-headed figure, which was a combination of Ribery and Raul. So the closest they would allow themselves to believe that Raul might actually not have a place in the team anymore is him being some sort of two-headed monster with Ribery, because it might be one or the other. They've come up with Florentine so far, but I think it's Galacticos. But, you know, it's almost Galacticos Express, isn't it? Because, I mean, you know, it used to be build a Galactico each season. It's now build the 3 years' worth of Galacticos in 1 year alone.
Right, okay. Around. Two final questions for you then. One, do you have a favourite pod memory of this season, Sid? Preferably from this pod, not from one of the others you've been doing.
Yeah, I particularly like that time that Chappell slowed me up. That was really good, that was. My pod moments are just all of Sean's brilliant tortured analogies. They're always fantastic.
Yeah, they're not just tortured, they're waterboarded, your analogies, aren't they? They are really, my word. And all right, final question then. What's this I hear about your stag do this weekend, Sid?
Oh, Christ, listen.
What's the skinny on that?
Well, I don't know what the skinny on that is, because obviously I'm not privy to such information.
I would imagine that if Sean had anything to do with organising your stag do, it'll be an art gallery in the morning, right, followed by a vegetarian lunch, then a visit to a museum in the afternoon, and then a trip to the cinema. So, Sid,
Baz, you've missed a couple of things out. You've missed out the bench presses in the stairwell, the sit-ups.
Yeah. So if you get a hankering for a few pints at any stage, Sid, you can give me a shout, and I'll take you out for a drink.
I think if Sean's organising it, probably the best thing is that it's not set in a brewery, because there might be one or two inherent problems with that. But where are you? Can I just ask, actually, Sid, at the moment, where are you? Are you at Real Madrid?
Despite the fact that she hasn't said anything, I'm actually taking the dog for a walk, because I know I'm going to spend the rest of the day either chained to my desk or chained to my phone, and therefore she should do this before she goes bonkers later on.
All right. Well, listen, many, many, many best wishes, and I'm sure I speak for all pod listeners, to you and the future Mrs. Sid with your upcoming nuptials, and I hope your stag do is terrific fun, etc. So, well, listen, have a lovely summer.
I shall try.
And if we can match your demands, we look forward to you joining us next season.
Fantastic. I expect to see a statement on Manchester United's website saying I've just signed for them for £80 million.
Don't even joke about it, Mr. Sid. We speak to you later. Have a wonderful Verano, and best wishes.
Fantastic.
Thanks, Sid. Sid Lowe with us there. Well, that's it for part one. A little bit, just a tiny bit more transfer talk and a bit of reaction from the Milan point of view on the Kaká move coming up after this. And indeed, well, there you go. There's all sorts of other stories going on at the moment, and I'm sure you've seen them. Ibrahimovic possibly moving to Barcelona. Aguero maybe going to Chelsea. Pirlo maybe going to Chelsea, because he may be feeling, he certainly publicly said that there's a certain amount of unrest in the Milan camp after the departure of Kaká.
He could be next season's Deco, couldn't he?
Yeah, it's an interesting analogy. He had a brilliant game for when he did come on for Italy against New Zealand out in South Africa.
I think the key words there are against New Zealand.
Yeah, but didn't New Zealand go a goal up in that game?
They were continually ahead in that game.
How did it finish?
It finished 4-3 to Italy, but only after Marcello Lippi panicked and threw everybody on. But he panicked. He never panics, Marcello Lippi. He just casually puffed on his Havana and said it was a good training exercise. Yes, Pirlo not happy about Kaká leaving. Paolo Maldini, the most public voice of disapproval of the move. He says this is epochal, he said. Milan never sell their champions, which Shevchenko is going to take an interesting view on. With him gone and with Leonardo coming in as the manager, there are too many gambles at this club, says Maldini. And to think of us having any kind of chance of success in the Champions League without Kaká is utopia, says Paolo Maldini.
And it's interesting, if Ibrahimovic does go, with Kaká go as well, where does that leave Serie A?
Well, obviously it's a big blow to Serie A, although in the same way, although Ibrahimovic had a brilliant season domestically for Inter last year, top scorer, etc., and technically an astonishingly gifted player, I'm sure that in the same way that there are some Man United fans who will be happy to see the back of Cristiano Ronaldo because the brilliant though he is a bit of a tit and it's a bit hard having a tit in your team, there will be Inter fans who feel the same way about Ibrahimovic and especially the way he's been, I'm going to use the word whoring himself around the Liga looking for a move to either Barca or Real Madrid, which as yet hasn't happened, especially because there might be something sweet coming back the other way from Inter's point of view. And having Ibrahimovic there, I mean, they can afford to lose him and still win in Serie A, or at least be competitive. And another player might make them more of a European force. It might help them to fit together better as a team, which they certainly didn't do when they came up against continental opposition. From Milan's point of view, they're getting a lot of money for Kaká. Question there as well is how much of it's going to be spent on new players. The big move that seems to be in the works is for Edin Dzeko, the very exciting Croatian...
Bosnian,
second highest scorer, but he took a while to get a place in the Wolfsburg side, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he scored something ridiculous, like 10 goals in the last 5 or 6 games of the season.
Yeah. Well, Dzeko hasn't been hiding his desire to go to Milan. He says, they are part of the lifeblood of football. I want to go to Milan. Wolfsburg are at present refusing to talk about selling him, but we shall see what happens with that. The other...
I just ask, as a matter of interest, if you were good enough and could play for any team you wanted in the world and money was no object, who would you play for?
You're asking me?
Yeah, well, everyone. I'd go for Barcelona.
It's a heck of a city.
Lovely city, great club, great history. Definitely Barca for me. You?
That's a really tough question.
No, it's easy. Sunderland, no question.
I have very split loyalty.
Roma.
Would you
like
to play for
Roma or Barcelona? Just because, again, I think you want to live in a nice city, don't you? As well as play for a team with some history. Barca, I think, is a good shout. Yeah, Barry Barca's and I could lead the line, couldn't we? Mm-hmm. Move over Thierry Henry.
Well, you'd be in goal.
That's true.
Yep. I'd be left back.
You're left back in the dressing room.
No. Oh, I see. That was where I played for Burr Town.
Of course. Well, there you go. Very interesting. Very interesting.
You haven't answered the question, have
No,
you?
I haven't. I think Barcelona would be a lovely place. Obviously, my heart would be with Roma, but would I feel competitive? Would I feel that, like Totti, I would end up being never receiving the recognition I deserved internationally? Perhaps go for Milan, which all football players say is a dream club to play for?
Are we talking about your football career or your broadcasting?
Another knife in the open wound, Sean Ingle. Let's move on to Filippo Scolari joining... Bunyodkor, where he reunites with Rivaldo. I love the comments here. The former Chelsea manager joining the Uzbeki champions. He explains to us why this move that some would find surprising. He says, Uzbek football is on an upswing right now. I know that I am in the right place at the right time. I made this choice because of a number of details which are difficult to explain in an interview, but it's basically because of the project which I was offered.
Of salary, as somebody would call it.
Salary, yeah. Indeed. So there you go. Uzbeki football. We'll have to get an Uzbeki correspondent for next season, because that's very much the coming force in world football. Speaking of world football, et cetera, because I keep apparently pronouncing that word wrong. Internationals. It's time to go on to internationals, is it, producer Pete? Yes, it is. England, of course, 2 games, blah blah blah, 10 goals against a couple of minnows. They've now won 7 in a row. They only need 3 points from the last 3 games to qualify. This despite that 8-hour journey to the game. And that was just the match against Andorra at Wembley. London Transport gag there. Sorry, Jonathan.
I was in Zagreb on Saturday.
I know you are. Just coming to that. Rooney scored 10 in 7. And so obviously everyone's very excited about that.
But can't you see the man is bursting?
But Jonathan, you went to Zagreb to see Croatia's 2-2 draw with Ukraine. How was that?
Ukraine were awful. I don't understand how they got a 2-2 draw out of that. As soon as Shevchenko went off midway through the first half with a thigh injury, Ukraine offered nothing. Somehow scored again from a free kick. And I think you see the problems Croatia have. Now that Niko Kovac isn't there, the back of the midfield, Juric first half really didn't have the level of control Niko Kovac gives them. Or gave them. So with the 3 attacking players in midfield, they never got the ball. Second half, Bilic makes 2 changes. Interestingly, with Modric across to the left, as he plays for Tottenham, where he looked much more comfortable, was far more involved, scored a goal, hit the post late on. And really, the last half hour was all Croatian attacking. And they probably should have won it, but didn't.
Right.
Which means that they and Ukraine are now level, but on the head-to-head, Ukraine are ahead on away goals. 0-0 draw in Ukraine, 2-2 draw in...
But it's good news from England.
Oh, it's very good news for England, yeah.
Ukraine
yeah.
only beat Johnny Kazakh 2-1 last night.
They were behind as well, yeah.
Mm.
I like talking about Kazakhstan, actually, because it gives me a chance to show my knowledge of their great cycling history. Their famous son, Jamaluddin Abdujaparov, who I'm sure you're all familiar with.
Well, indeed.
I just like saying Jamaluddin Abdujaparov.
Well, you do it very well, Barry.
I know.
One more. Go on.
Jamaluddin Abdujaparov.
All right.
If you Google or look for him on YouTube, actually, yep. he's the victim of one of the worst Tour de France crashes of all time, a sprint down the Champs-Élysées.
But I don't know how you see him as a victim in that, do you?
Well,
he was seen as the instigator of most of that stuff.
Well, he just got so clattered so badly.
That was a horrific crash.
Had to be carried over the line because he couldn't finish the race.
Hmm. All right, but anyway, football.
Cycling Weekly here on the Guardian.
Now, elsewhere, do we need to talk any more about England, Sean? Anything you want to say?
To be honest, you don't learn anything really. We all watch a lot of football here on the pod, and often, to be honest, there's matches we don't particularly want to do. It's almost like a vet sticking up, a hand up, a cow's unmentionables. It's something you don't really want to have to do, but you do it anyway because it's for the good of the job. But last night,
it can be quite pleasant. It's nice and warm up there, if it's a really cold day.
Basically, you learn nothing from watching England beat Andorra last night.
Right. Although there was a spectacular
I'm getting slightly concerned.
Right.
I don't mind saying, England have what looks like a good team. They have a good manager. They have two good full backs, which Jonathan Wilson wrote recently is, the most important part of any team. And what's most worrying of all is that the English media, who would normally already at this stage be getting the hype machine going, we're going to win, we're going to win, we're going to win, they're not saying that and they're not doing that.
They did on Monday. Had all Wayne Rooney, we can win. It was back page of the Sun and they were...
Well, I don't mind so much the players saying it, because what are they going? They can't say otherwise, we have no hope. But
you're concerned that after next summer you will have to move country.
Well, then again, we saw the squad players from 66 get presented with their medals yesterday, and I would imagine the chances of two sets of England players getting presented with World Cup medals in the space of 12 months would have to be very, very slim.
Well, we shall see. Elsewhere, there are one or two teams that are now officially through to South Africa, the Netherlands, Japan, Australia, South Korea. The Dutch went through with a 2-1 victory away to Iceland, which is good news for Scotland because it means that Iceland are something rather further.
Well, the danger what people I think forget is that not every runner-up is guaranteed a playoff place. It's only 8 of 9, and I think that group... Because everybody seems to be taking points off each other.
Mm.
I think that group's the one that's in the biggest danger of missing out on the runners-up.
All right. Elsewhere, Australia didn't concede a single goal in the final qualifying phase there.
The group Australia had to qualify out of is a joke.
All right.
While we're talking football, we should give a nod to Ireland's...
We're talking football, as opposed to kind of hands up cows' arses and stuff.
Well, no, we should give a nod to Ireland, 1-1 draw against Bulgaria, even though they dived and they cheated and they rolled around. I mean, they are a team in Trapattoni's image. I mean, the way they're going, give it 6 months and they'll all have long, greasy hair tied back in a ponytail, which on Richard Dunn will not be a good look. They've got every chance now of making the playoff.
Well, Tom Humphreys in the Irish Times wrote an interesting column on Monday saying that when you look at the components of Trapattoni's team, it shouldn't work. There's no reason why they should be doing so well in their group.
Hmm.
But it does work, and he was sort of couldn't figure out whether Trapp was just lucky or really good or a combination of both. But looking very good for the Republic of Ireland. I still get annoyed, though. I think they're a bit too cautious. Like them going to Bulgaria and getting a draw was just so predictable.
Mm. All right. Well, Italy, meanwhile, top of that group and looking good, especially thanks to that draw between their two chief rivals. Northern Ireland, who got beaten by Italy 4-0 last weekend, an experimental Italy side, are trailing Slovakia in their group. Poland looking in all sorts of trouble, as are the Czechs in that one. I'll just ramble through these. Russia beat Finland. They're now 1 point behind Germany in Wales's group, Gus Hiddink back in the day job. And, the Germans could be in trouble there.
I think that Germany still have to go to Russia, don't they? So possibly, yeah. Mm. I think that Russia lost 2-1, I think, in Germany. So yeah.
France, they're in all sorts of trouble as well, aren't they?
Yeah, 2-0 win for Serbia over the Faroes last night. Yep. Just good enough to keep them 8 points clear.
Portugal and Sweden in that group with Denmark and Hungary are in all sorts of trouble. Sweden got beaten at home by Denmark, and looking extremely unlikely they're going to go anywhere near the World Cup, but we shall see. And the same story for the Portuguese, which would be a real blow. Right, but I mentioned South America. Yeah, that's it. South America, where Brazil and Chile are just a step away from qualifying. Brazil top of the group, Chile in second place. Who is in all sorts of trouble, though, is Argentina in fourth place, who were beaten Wednesday night by the team only 2 points behind them in fifth. And remember, only the top four go through. And the fifth place team has to play, is it New Zealand? No, it's the CONCACAF team, isn't it? CONCACAF team. So anyway, that's two very bad results out of three for Argentina. We all recall they're a 6-1 disaster away to
Bolivia.
Yep, that's how much we call it. This one was against Ecuador. Barry, you saw it.
Yes.
And I think we're also going to get Marcelo More Araujo, a top Maradona supporting columnist, to see whether this latest setback has in any way forced a reappraisal of El Pibe's work on the Argentina bench. Marcelo More Araujo, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Marcelo. Sorry, we've been a bit delayed because there were lots of other things and Barry's hand up a cow's nether regions to discuss. Marcelo, you were very delighted with Maradona's appointment. And how are you and how is the Argentine media feeling about his reign now?
Well, I'd like to qualify that because I don't know that I was very delighted. I remember distinctly thinking we should give him the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
My initial knee-jerk reaction was, oh my God, what has happened? But it then seemed fair to say, well, let's see how he handles it.
I
think it's an interesting point now in this kind of era of Maradona's management, because it seems that the risks that we feared are emerging, and you know the results-wise, it's scary, but it's not tragic, and we've still got a chance to qualify. Things are okay; we're in the top four. However, the actual way the Argentina are playing, what's happening on the pitch, and the kind of responses to some of these slightly surprising underperformances seem to correspond to the, you know, the old Maradona, the kind of the side of Maradona that we all feared. I just heard from a few Argentinian journalists that I'm with at the moment who are here in England, that after the Bolivia defeat, Maradona took to his room and locked himself up in this kind of deep, deep depression, and there were rumors that he was taking antidepressants and he wasn't speaking to anybody. And this is not something that's been reported or discussed openly. I think that's very interesting, because what we don't know is what Maradona thinks about all this. And I think part of the kind of art of good management or excellent management is all about how you respond to situations, what you say to your players, how you motivate them before a match, keep them going at halftime and wind them down after. And so far, it just seems that there's something between Maradona and the players that's not happening. Now, some of the players in that squad are absolutely amazing players. They've had great seasons in clubs in Europe, Argentina, all over the world. So there's really no excuse for them to underperform so incredibly consistently. One terrible result is one thing. Four bad results or mediocre performances in a row, I think, is much, much more scary.
Marcela, one thing that struck me about the game last night was that Argentina didn't actually play that badly. They should have won comfortably. They should have been maybe 3-0 up after the hour mark. Messi and Gago both missed great chances. Tevez missed a penalty, but they could also have lost 3-0 because Ecuador's, probably when the thin air of Quito got to the Argentinians up at altitude, Walter Iovi scored a screamer. Palacios, the Ecuadorian or Barcelona player, that's Barcelona in Ecuador, scored a good goal, and Palacios hit the post late on as well. So, I think Argentina just needed a bit of luck last night, really, and they would have won that game quite handily.
Well, I agree they didn't play as badly as they did last Saturday, for example. But I think that's football, isn't it? I mean, you know, phrase in Argentina that I like very much, which said if it's not the post, if it doesn't hit the post, then it's a goal. And that's always the case. I mean, I think it's six of one and half a dozen of the other. They could have won 3-0, they could have lost 3-0 or whatever. But in every match, those possibilities are in front of you. And they didn't play that badly, which is reassuring. But at the same time, they did seem to lose a little bit of focus and energy towards the end of the game. And interestingly,
but they were playing on top of a mountain.
Yeah, they were playing high up in the altitude, and they had suffered through not preparing adequately for that before. And one of the things they did in order to kind of address the problems of the Bolivia fiasco was to talk to Bauza, who's an Argentinian manager who's been working in Quito for many years, and discuss with him in advance what the situation was. And what he said was, watch out for the last half hour, because we won all our matches with Liga de Quito on the, you know, banking on the fact that visiting opponents would lose energy in the last half hour. And what happened to Argentina yesterday, but to the minute, was that they just ran out of, not just ran out of energy, I think, but seemed to also lose that focus that for the first half hour they seem to have.
Plenty of big questions then ahead over the summer, Marcelo. Thank you very much for that, and have a lovely summer yourself, I hope.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Are you not podding through the summer?
No, I'm afraid it all comes to a grinding halt after this one, but we will be
no
back.
No transfer pod.
No, sadly not. No. Marcelo, brilliant stuff. Thank you very much for that anyway, and chin up.
Thank you very much.
Marcelo Moya Rajo, and that is it for part two. Still to come, though, listeners.
There's only one part left.
Let's savour it, Barry. Let's make it a really special part. Should we put away any differences and tensions and stresses that may have cropped up during the season, Sean? And should we just see if we can make it a really good, successful part?
Come here, big guy.
Oh, I love you. Listeners, we're just going to take a moment.
Football Weekly Extra. On guardian.co.uk.
That felt good. Now, a couple of posts. Goldikova. Question for Jonathan Wilson. Do you have a view on Serbian international midfielder Nenad Milojas?
He's been linked with Wolves and Aston Villa. Defence midfielder scored the penalty on Saturday that won 1-0 against Austria. Yes, he's very good.
There you go. Turn up Thomas, in all the excitement last week, you somehow missed Pumas winning the Mexican League and how manager Tuca Ferretti lost his trademark moustache thanks to veteran keeper Sergio Bernal and midfield lung Leandro holding him down to shave it off at full time. Turn up Thomas would also like Sean to comment on, I can't believe you've asked this, Turn up Thomas, as if you don't know the reaction this is going to get, the politics of the video replay debate. Turn up Thomas is basically then airs over several paragraphs his conspiracy theory about Adidas getting their system to go to the next stage of FIFA development when the brilliant Hawkeye system hasn't, and it's a bit of a shambles and stuff. There you go. Do you have a one-word answer for that one?
No.
Okay. The beloved aunt, what are you most looking forward to for next season? For me, says the beloved aunt, aside from seeing how Keane gets on, I presume he means Roy Keane, it'll be whether Burnley can hold their own in the Premiership. If Phil Brown manages to return from his summer holidays, the same shade as George Hamilton. Burnley, can they hold their own in the Premiership?
There are lots of rubbish teams in the Premier League this still up there, so they can. But they need to keep hold of their players and perhaps bring in one or two others, but they could certainly end up finishing 15th or 16th.
All right, Roger Palmer wants us to talk about the under-21 competitions, which I think is going to be an interesting tournament this time around. Do you know?
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it's nice to have a break from football. We had a referendum in the paper the other day. Are you looking forward to a bit of respite from football? Because after the England-Andorra game, we're sort of living off scraps until the middle of August. And while I am wholeheartedly looking forward to a break, I will be dipping in and out of the under-21s. I'd say it'll be good.
Okay. I think Serbia could be very good at the under-21s.
Could they?
I mean, I'm actually going to be in South Africa for the Confederations Cup.
Right.
So I won't necessarily see it, but I think they should be worth looking at.
Cool. All right. Villa Support Group. I don't care about Setanta staying on the air. I care about James Richardson staying on the air. Thanks, Villa Support Group. Can't someone at least bail him out?
We're doing our best here.
You're doing your best, aren't you, Sean? Indeed. Hey, Barry, you won an award.
I did. I was voted the... Not that I like to blow my own trumpet.
Have a toot. Go
on. Oh, you know I love blowing my own trumpet. Not in that way.
But what way do I know?
You don't look that flexible, Baz.
I was nominated for, along with my colleagues, Paul Doyle and Kevin McCarra,
right.
Was nominated as for in the category of Best Podcast Pundit
right.
For on the EPL message board or website blog thing.
Hmm.
And I won. I beat Mark Cotty and among others. And you were nominated as Best Podcast Presenter, but you didn't win.
No, I won the other category for Best TV Presenter.
Right. Yeah. Did I get Best Book on that? I know I was nominated, I didn't see the results.
I don't know.
Oh, that's so cool, Jonathan. You didn't even bother to check the results. I only know because somebody emailed me.
I think they notified the winners, so I suspect you didn't.
Bugger.
Yeah. They didn't.
But I haven't even got my gong or my check yet, have you?
No.
No.
Now, speaking of awards, time for the Best of Pods and the Worst of Pods, as we look back on the season in what, Barry? What?
No, nothing.
No, what? You just...
You're about to ask me what for my best and worst pod moments, aren't you?
Well, we can do. You haven't got one.
Well, my memory is so bad that
at
the moment my best pod moment is you asking me for my best pod moment, because I can't remember what happened in previous pods. I drank too much beer when I was growing up.
Right. Now, growing up, yeah. Right, anyway. Okay, the good news is, Barry Glendenning, that listeners have done much of the work for you.
Oh, good.
And there's going to be one or two key words and phrases that will no doubt trigger happy, warm feelings. Right, here we go. Now, basically, best footballing moment. Here's a couple of suggestions. Iniesta's goal for Barcelona. A lot of people posting in with that one.
Against Chelsea, you mean?
Yes. Good point. Meister and a couple of others mentioning the 4-4 Liverpool draws with Arsenal, with Chelsea. A lot of other people mentioning Makeda's dramatic winner against Villa. Mike O'Neill's Mark David Bentley's long-range half volley in the 4-4 thrill against Arsenal. Tottenham was a good shout. Carling Cup semi-final between Burnley and Spurs. Jonathan, what was yours? Something Azerbaijani?
No, very parochially. Kieran Richardson's free kick for Sunderland against Newcastle.
All right, we won
the derby for the first time at home in 28 years.
Barry, me asking you the question?
Yes. I really enjoy that Bentley goal, actually, yeah. And he seems to have disappeared off the face of the earth ever since.
Sean?
I think Barcelona throughout the season have been amazing, but I think the Villa United game and Marqueda's late goals, that I think won United the title, so that was probably up there.
Right, okay.
I really enjoyed, and I'm going to get slaughtered for this, but it really made me laugh. Michael Ballack doing these star jumps in front of the referee in that semi-final first leg, or second leg. And the subsequent bleatings of thousands of nouveau Chelsea fans who are still convinced that it was a conspiracy to... a UEFA conspiracy not to have an all-English Champions League final.
Mm. Indeed.
Actually, if you want something that's not Sunderland-related, yes. Bosnia's two victories over Belgium back-to-back has taken them 4 points clear of Turkey in the race for the playoff spot.
Was Dzeko a big factor in those?
Yes, he scored in both games.
All right, then. Okay. Sean, you posted some categories for awards and stuff, and one of them was Best Pod Moment. We had plenty of suggestions here. A lot of people coming with Raphael's brilliant review of the European Championship final. Germany completely dominated the game, but then after 2 minutes, .. A Portlander mentions three. The pedantics around the word revelry, which culminated in Sid calling coffee-flavoured revels bastards. When we tried to call Rafa and we got the wrong number, a lot of people mentioned that. Rafa answering the question, what's the German for Schadenfreude? That old chestnut. What else? Your Iniesta goal celebration, on your knees on the carpet with your friends with his fist clenched.
Top off.
Top off, yes. And Bobetto with Fernando Duarte and his, you know how much Zico costs? $4 million! Today you can't even buy Lucas Neal for $4 million. And Lucas Neal's horrible. I hate you, Lucas Neal. That was, of course, Fernando Duarte.
And, how is Fernando?
I don't think he's well, actually. I think he's well. He's off
he never things. Writes. He never calls.
Indeed not. Now, tell you what, there's also all sorts of other categories. Sean, you asked for best pun. What else? Was a player of the season, favourite podster, but... Yeah, actually, Barry, you won that most consistent podder. This was in a survey which was conducted by Martin Samuelson. Runner-up, Paul Doyle. But I don't know.
Does that just mean appeared the most often?
I think so. Consistently.
Not really a record to
good,
be proud
bad.
Of.
Didn't specify that. Yeah. Interesting point. Least popular person was a category suggested by listeners. Phil Brown was pretty much the runaway winner there. Now, just to kind of finish off, bon mots, as they say, Richard W.J. says, how can you pick a favourite out of thousands of puns, as you'd ask for a best pun? It's like trying to choose the best album by The Fall. Each good in their own way, but you never want to hear any of them again. Which is a very, very nice analogy, Richard W.J.
I'm going to have to get into The Fall. I've read lots of interviews with right. Marky Smith, and I know they have about 200 albums, mm-hmm. but I've
and
never
about
heard
200 former members as well.
I've never heard any of them.
All right, well, the obvious starting point, especially given our subject matter, would be Sparta FC.
Right.
But there are down. Plenty of other. All right, but Sparta FC, but producer Pete wants me to get back on topic. So there you go. So, well, there's been plenty of suggestions here. The chat being more down in the mouth than a duvet-eating champion. There's no Stoke without Fi. That was one of my favourites. And somebody else mentioning there's no pleasing Suffolk, which I was very happy about that one. But the survey came up with a runner-up, which was the one which everyone gets the wrong way around with. What's the point of having Sesc if you can't swap bodily fluids? That was but the winner was the one about if Fulham are going to start going down at home, can they still be called the Cottagers? Woohoo! But there you go. And the worst pun, incidentally, was rated. Somebody says runner up. This was in the survey by. Did we mention it? Martin Samuelson, who very kindly organised this. Thank you, Martin. Various goose puns, and there were plenty. Foie gras, that was one of them. And the worst pun of all was the Football Weekly Extra, which I don't think we ever made. I think that was a listener back in our poaching days.
It's an apocryphal pun.
Yeah, exactly. An urban
pun.
Yeah, pun. All right. And favourite Sean Ingalls simile.
Oh, God.
Oh, dear. As you can imagine, there were plenty of contenders here. We were flooded with suggestions like a, what? Basement flat near a river during English summer? I don't know. Anyway, Sean, you're the master. And here were some of your... coming twice, like Ron Jeremy. No, like Jesus. That was one. But the winner, clearly, was your Deeper in the Doo-Doo extravaganza, which, to be fair, you never even finished.
I didn't. I was going to go Deeper in the Doo-Doo than a vet stuck up a cow's ass, but I wasn't sure whether we could say it.
No, listeners came up with much, much better ones. And I think the favourite one in the end was the guy who had Deeper in the Doo-Doo than Lou Reed singing the chorus of...
Walk on the Wild
Side. Walk on the Wild Side. Well, that was clearly the backing singers who did that bit. Oh, no, he did as well, didn't he?
Well, they were providing the doo-doo, but he was deep in it.
Yeah, he certainly was, didn't he? Which was genius. And I think we promised the person who sent that in a prize, which we obviously haven't delivered on. Producer Pete, though, would like the final word, and it is that his favourite moment of the season was when you said that Anelka was so streaky, you could wrap him in, what was it? Dip him in fat lard and call him bacon. Oh, dear. Happy memories. But there you go. I think we've spun this out for about as long as we can. As probably Rapunzel said to the prince when she was at the... Yeah. Sorry, what came over me there? And time for us then to say many, many thanks to all the pod personnel who've been here over the course of the season. I should have written a list so we don't miss anybody out, but it doesn't really matter to them.
But most of all, though, we should thank the listeners, shouldn't we, James?
Yeah, most of all, we should thank the listeners.
Why?
What did they do?
They kept you busy at 2 a.m. when
all
you could
they do is yeah. download the pod and then listen to it. There's no effort there.
Right. Okay,
we put in all the work.
But if there were no...
Dragging our sorry arses into the studio at some ungodly hour... Talk
nine,
about
9
Cristiano Ronaldo,
yes.
Where Kuhn is going.
But if there were no listeners, there'd be no...
We could still make the pod.
But who'd come and listen to it?
Yeah.
Well, it's a bit of a philosophical conundrum.
If four men do a pod, nobody listens to it.
But yeah. Does it exist?
Just like, should we ask Chappers? Because he might have some experience in...
But that would just be a conversation. And I'm certain they happen without people listening.
What?
It would just be a conversation.
Sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
Clearly, conversations don't happen.
Did you actually speak? I wonder.
Oh, dear.
All right, well, listen, let's take the summer off then and come back to this in August, I think. Sean, would that be...
We'll be back in August, yeah. And bright and fresh and ready to mm-hmm. talk about a new season.
Excellent. I cannot wait myself. So many, many thanks, producer Pete, and all the other producers who stepped in while producer Pete was off. And to you, Barry.
You're welcome.
Not at all. And you, Jonathan Wilson.
Thank you.
Have a lovely summer, everyone. And you, Sean.
See you in August.
Indeed. So, and you listeners, for making it all happen, we'll be back a little bit later on.